Hey, Sasha.
So,
Hey guys, have either of you seen Mike? He got a letter.
nope, haven't seen him. Can check his
whoa,
office?
whoa, 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 whoa. Mike got a letter? How was it delivered?
Yeah, I ch did check his office, Brian. He wasn't there. And that is an excellent question, Ben. I just found it in a tube in the mailroom.
We have a mailroom? Why was I not informed? Again, how are we getting mail delivered?
It's actually a pneumatic tube system that was left over from a Cold War bunker that I installed when the command center was originally built.
But where would the mailman drop the letter off at? Let alone, how would anyone know where to have something mailed to us?
Yeah, I may or may not have a side business selling various inventions that I use to help pay for all this cool stuff here at the command center. It's rather successful, actually. Unless you're Luxembourg. They were not so lucky.
Can we just
Wait! What did you do to Luxembourg?
I'm not allowed to discuss it under Article 13, Paragraph 12, Subsection 18 of the United Nations Nuclear Deproliferation Guidelines.
I'm not sure which is more worrying, that you are talking about nuclear deproliferation or that you have that memorized.
It comes up a lot.
Back to the mail, please. So letters are dropped off at the post office, which then has the mail transferred through the tubes to here.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. That's all fine and dandy, but that still leaves the question, where is Mike?
Hey guys.
Oh, good. There you are. You got a letter.
Well, hello to you too. And who's the letter from?
Don't know, as it doesn't say, and quite frankly, I don't care.
Well, the letter doesn't tell me who it's from, so no idea on that front. Plus, it's rather vague, too. The letter says, "Michael, when one journey ends, a new one will begin. All will be known in due time."
That is rather vague.
Gee, whatever could that possibly mean?
Don't know. And honestly, I'm not going to worry about it right now. We got an episode to record.
All right, let's go. Oh, Brian, we're gonna need to chat later about this mail tube system thing, as I've got more questions. Like, how does it handle action figures?
That is a great question.
And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Voices from the Grid. I am the Blue Ranger, Michael, and I just had a brain fart right off the bat to start the episode. That's,
that's gonna be oh yeah that that
but
that's
it's me,
impressive.
Blue
Was that a good
Ranger.
casting choice, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Anyways, I'm being joined by a shockingly beardless Pink Ranger, Brian.
Hi everybody, how's it going? I'm gonna get through this with a massive head cold. How's everybody doing today?
You can do the thing. The tiny potato believes in you, Brian.
That tiny potato. God bless you.
We are being joined by the Red Ranger Pink, the Red Ranger
Ranger Pink,
Sasha.
Sasha, what?
Red Ranger Pink? What?
I mean, the
Wow,
walls
guys.
behind her isn't like a pinkish purple color, and it threw me off a little bit for a second.
The one, the only, the ever snarky Sasha Kaplan, who's utterly confused why she's here and reviewing this episode because it's a waste of time.
And of
That
course,
could be said for like 90% of the first like 5 seasons.
but especially this multi-parter.
And then of course we have our Green Ranger, Mr. Ben Taylor.
What up? It's me, your boy. Like, comment, subscribe, and ring that. Oh, wait, that's YouTube.
And on this episode, we are doing It's No Business Like Snow Business, which is a three-part episode, which is also the infamous Dear John episode for Tommy. So yes, this is Tommy-centric. And I'm just going to lead it right off the bat with our first question. So Tommy receives a letter from Kimberly, and everyone is excited, including Tanya, for some odd reason. Tommy reads the letter and is the infamous Dear John letter that informs Tommy that Kim has met someone else and is breaking up with him. Now, for you guys, personal feelings aside, because we know what your personal feelings are about Tommy and all this stuff, how do you feel this was handled by the show's writers and producers?
So they didn't have that many options. In the sense that, like, it's not like Amy Jo Johnson was going to come back just so those they could break them up. Could they have had her do it through, like, a phone call? Sure. And just, like, not heard her Kimberly on the other end or something. But to be perfectly honest, I don't care.
There's a precedence for old Rangers that are no longer currently on Saban's payroll. Communicating with the current team through snail mail. So while getting dumped via a letter is really, really crappy, what else could they do? And this kind of helps set up what they were trying to do, where Tommy and Kat become a thing eventually. So I guess they had to address that somehow.
I have thoughts about that later on, Brian. So get back to me about the whole Kat and Tommy sitch for this.
Will do.
So to address your Tanya, little barb there, Michael,
I mean, I had to put it in there because it was odd as hell.
Because you were absolutely taking the question from Ranger Wiki, because it says pretty much the same thing. Tanya is quite clearly a spot. She's a brainiac. And there is no way that having spent this much time around the team, and especially this much time around Tommy, Kimberly would not have come up in conversation.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not like this was the first letter she probably ever sent to Tommy.
It's not like Tanya showed up in the future and then Kimberly's letter was there, right? They've been around each other for a couple of months at this point. And I refuse to believe that like Kat and Tommy and Billy haven't talked, and the others haven't talked about Kimberly. I refuse to believe that, especially when I think that Tanya would have asked about the history of the Rangers, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If not that Tommy and Kimberly were dating.
Yeah. Wait, who's this Jason guy? You know.
And then again, she recognizes Jason later in the season because she's been told who he is. Right.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for later episodes.
Whoops.
Let's be real here. The people that watch these, that listen to this podcast, probably have seen all of these episodes and just want to hear our snarky takes on them. Hopefully.
So I think this was handled It's hard to say this was handled horribly, because it could have been handled much, much worse, right? And much like the power transfer in earlier seasons, they did the best with the hand they were dealt. Kind of. I think it was nice they even bothered to give us closure on Tommy and Kimberly before they started to push the Tommy and Kat romance any further, right?
Yeah.
However, it's quite clear that it was done in a way to not tarnish Tommy in any way, right?
So Interestingly, in this little bit, I actually did pull from the Ranger Wiki. So apparently, Kim's letter.
I'd like to point out, whenever I'm saying stuff like that, it's just because I'm trying to screw with Mike. I don't genuinely believe he's reading from the Ranger Wiki.
But right. this little note, though, actually did come from the Ranger Wiki, in that there was actually fan backlash to Kim's letter to Tommy. Mm-hmm. That apparently they had to cause changes to the script of Turbo Movie.
Yeah. Because other than like one little comment between Kim and Kat when they fight, it's never mentioned.
Yeah. And apparently in the original script of the movie, they were supposed to mention Florida, the gymnastic games, the letter, like all this was supposed to be in there. But because of this episode and the backlash to the letter, the Turbo Movie, when Kim shows up, it's completely different from what they originally wanted to do.
But yeah, like I was saying, it's quite clear that they wrote it in such a way to have Tommy be
the dumpy, not the dumper.
For him to come out of it clean, basically. Yeah. What would have been really interesting is, and again, this is me expecting long-term storytelling from Power Rangers, so bear with me. If, like, for a few episodes before this, he's mentioning how much he's missing Kim, right? And then there's, like, a mutual breakup between the two of them.
Right.
Right? Because long distance isn't working. Yeah. Instead, what we get is Kim dumps him via a letter. Right?
Because she starts dating Florida Man.
Yeah.
So...
Depends on the continuity you believe in, Brian.
Sure.
But
yes. Would it have been nice to have AJJ show up and be on the other end of the phone call? Yes. Would it have been nice to have them do it in a way that wasn't quite so clearly trying to make Tommy the good guy in it all? Yes. But I don't know.
If I can add something to it, I remember watching this episode when I was younger and sort of being very much annoyed by it, not because it was in a letter so much, but just because they broke them up. But I had been more upset, like I remember now in retrospect, being upset when like Kimberly left the show and Kat joined, because I at the time I had like a little bit of a bias towards the original cast, and so you know, I was a kid, I was like it was the rose-colored glasses of nostalgia talking. But as an adult, I just don't care, and I'm counting down until Tommy leaves the show.
So can we talk about the letter a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Sure. Okay.
So I have a few things that need to be said. Let's Poppy start with the fact that the shot of the letter being carried into the youth center is the most unnatural way to carry a letter. And the implication is it's Billy carrying the letter in, right? Because he's the one that hands it to Ernie and then takes it from Ernie and hands it to Tommy. So why didn't he just give it straight to Tommy because it's addressed to Tommy? Or was it addressed to Ernie, in which case Kimberly doesn't know her own boyfriend's address?
That was my question, which was like, why was this done at the juice bar? And why wasn't the letter just like sent to Tommy? Because what happens next is Tommy's like, oh my gosh, it's a letter from Kim. And he has Adam read it out loud.
Well, we'll get to that. Oh boy, we'll get to that.
So I have the Michael explanation for this.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Kim knows that Tommy lives at the youth center because he never leaves there because he's always doing something there. That she just felt, well, if I send it to the house, he probably ain't going to see it. But if I send it to the juice bar, he'll actually have a better chance of seeing it.
That or he's somehow getting his mail forwarded over to the juice bar. It's like, why?
Or what? I mean, Ernie needs to make the extra cash for the beach cafe.
It's true.
So he set up a P.O. box.
Hey, don't worry, Tommy. I'll open up a P.O. box for you. It's all good. Hey, I have one on the house. You know.
The next thing to notice, right, is when the letter is being carried in and when it is being carried from Ernie to Tommy, the letter is open. Ooh. Someone's read it.
Ooh.
Probably Ernie.
So someone already knows what is in this letter.
Well, given how Ernie was like, hey, man, you got a letter, I have to feel like it's got to be Billy who opened up his mail. And if that's the case, then what the hell, Billy?
And Billy's just kind of stood there going, I don't know what's coming. Sucks for you, Tommy. And the third thing is, yes, he gives it to Adam to read out because he's in the middle of doing a workout when he's given the letter, right? And the scene plays out like Tommy is sat on his throne and all of the peasants stood around him and his courtiers. And Adam is reading out like he's like the court proclaimer. Mm. And he starts reading this out and he gets to the end and he's like, huh. The whole thing bothers me intently that Tommy just wouldn't stop reading the letter, right? And the Adam wouldn't be like, no, read your own damn letter. Like, I'm not.
Remember, this is the Tommy Show featuring the Power Rangers.
I don't know.
We have to show him being happy and then being sad. And what better way to do that than have him on the bench press?
How about he's just not there?
It's just funny to me that the letter's open. Which means either they didn't reseal it after a previous take, or in universe, it means someone's read that letter.
Ernie, I'm telling you, Ernie, it has to be Ernie. He knows way too much about what goes on with these children not to be reading their mail.
I mean, there is that fan theory. Or to be on
some kind of list.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always been that fan theory that secretly Ernie was Zordon.
Yeah, that's way too meta for me. It's not that he's Zordon. It's just that he's the guy that this town completely depends on for everything. So we, yes, Ben.
I have a small flaw with the Ernie is Zordon theory.
Oh. Only a small one?
Ernie is more useful than Zordon. He actually gives useful advice.
Where's the mic drop sound effect? We need to put that in right now.
But,
yes, but yeah, I just wanted to talk about the fact that nowhere have I ever seen it mentioned that when the letter is handed from Billy to Ernie to Billy to Tommy, is it open already?
That's too many hands.
Ernie he has a really boring life, okay? He doesn't have a social life. His entire life is this juice bar. He vicariously lives through these teenagers and their antics.
Maybe that's why Tommy was able to get the letter from Ernie for free.
Yeah, there you go.
Instead of having to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, there's got to be something going on because the amount of things that these teenagers have historically done in this juice bar, between teaching their own karate classes and holding every single bake sale, charity auction, and you know, beach cleanup. There's gotta, like, Ernie probably knows a lot more. He's probably secretly the mayor and we just don't know it too.
Well, that's that's kind of the primary use of a youth center, I think. You know, it's a place for people to come together and do stuff, but I don't know.
Right. Anyways. But because of the limited budget and the fact that this is a kid's show, we never see, there's two locations primarily that we see in indoor locations, right? In the city. It's the juice bar and the high school.
So, any other notes before I move on to the next part?
Kill me now.
That's not a note.
So I do want to say, I'm trying really, really hard this episode, like really hard, not to make everything I say, ha ha ha, Tommy got dumped. just want to put that on record.
Yes. I'm going to put on record that I don't care about being nice. I have had a very, very long and very long work week. So, and then I was reminded that I had to watch these episodes, and I was like, well, they're not going to be that bad.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, let's get back to the questions.
All right. Yes. So moving on, as a result of the letter, Tommy is obviously depressed. So Billy and Catherine decide to invite Tommy to go snowboarding with them over the weekend. While snowboarding, Tommy meets Heather, a snowboarding champion, and they hit it off. So the idea of having Tommy being taken out for a weekend to clear his head is a good idea. But do you feel that the writers tried pushing him into a new romantic angle too soon?
No.
But I have a question. No. I have a question. So Billy and Kat invite Tommy to go skiing with them. Does that mean, did Billy and Kat already plan on going skiing together?
Yes.
And they were just like, hey, let's invite Tommy because he's depressed. And I was like, wait, so does that mean Kat and Billy have like a friendship going on where they hang out like outside of the entire group? Can we get more information on that? No, it's Power Rangers. Never mind.
So, a few things here. I don't think it was... So, the answer to your question is yes and no, right? I don't think the relationship with Heather was rushed. The one at the end of episode 3 with Kat, that was rushed into. Right.
And we'll get to that because I do have a question.
But the fact of the matter is... He's a high schooler. Rebounds happen. Right? And on top of that, that's kind of an answer to your later question. The icky implications of Heather and Tommy aside, she's a champion snowboarder and he's a senior in high school. Just think about the age difference.
I don't know anything about professional snowboarding. So how old is she?
She would be in her late 20s, probably.
Oh, that is not okay.
Yeah. She could be younger because keep in mind when it officially became Olympic sport, a lot of them were teenagers.
He's at best a senior in high school.
That means he's like 17, 18 years old, and she's at least 22 and older.
He could have failed a grade and be 19. I mean, I don't know.
Really? These goody goodies?
Yeah, you're right.
I'm surprised they're not ahead of
He was held back in kindergarten because he didn't have any friends.
But
that's why he moved.
All right.
Exactly.
I'm gonna So there's this psychological thing called transference, right? Look at me using my psychology GCSE. Where when someone goes through a stressful situation, they transfer feelings onto someone involved in this situation. It's talked about in Speed. If you've seen the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, like, turns out that Sandra Bullock was only into him because of the... Anyway, but with Heather going through what she went through on the mountain, she somewhat fixates on Tommy, even though Billy's the one that stays behind to help her. But for... Tommy was the one that was holding the jackets, I guess. But she'd already kind of bonded with Tommy, so that makes sense as to why he was the focus of her transference. But I don't think the thing with Heather was rushed. It was icky, it was weird, but it wasn't rushed. Kat, we'll talk about later.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think Heather is meant to be, like Ben said, a rebound. She's not here as a serious relationship because this entire episode demonstrates the one thing that is like this three-parter that I cannot believe is actually a three-parter points out is that his ranger duties ultimately make it difficult to date like a quote-unquote non-ranger because apparently the other rangers just can't do anything without Lord and Savior Tommy Oliver.
Oh, yeah. I've got notes about that.
Right? But my point being that, like, Heather is there as, like, a rebound, but also to demonstrate the fact that Tommy has to look in front of his nose at what's right in front of him, which I guess is Kat.
So, sorry to come back around to something you were saying. Brian, did you have anything before I jump back in?
I think y'all said whatever I was going to say, pretty much. I don't have anything else to add to that.
I think other than maybe Instrument of Destruction, this is the most high school episode of Zio.
Yeah. Like,
someone gets broken up with, they go out with their friends, they get a rebound hookup. Like, even though she's like 5 years older than him.
Yeah. Minimum.
Kind of weird. What it is worth noting, however, is it just... I don't know.
I feel your pain. I'm
trying to think of ways to put this that don't sound really gross. We never see Tommy and Heather really doing anything that makes them a couple. They flirt with going on a date once or twice, right? But it never actually happens. Just wanted to back that up because of what I was saying about the age difference. Just wanted to put that out there. Okay. Let's move on because, oh boy. Yeah.
So
it's amazing how there's not that much to talk about this episode, and yet there's a lot to talk about this episode.
We've got a 3-part episode that was clearly planned as a 2-part episode.
Yep.
Was then filled out with a bunch of snowboarding. And other stupid
snowboarding.
Though I will never not enjoy the cogs in the snowboarding like jester hats.
Those are pretty funny.
Entertained the hell out of me.
So, you know what? You know what I call those hats? Because the lead singer Second of Stick wears one of those at every show. So, I was like, are they wearing Second of Stick? Okay.
and it should be noted, Ben.
On top of the fact that a 2-part made a 3-parter, it didn't even need to be a 2-parter. This could have been a 1-part episode.
Yep.
Yeah. So to touch base on that point, so Ben is right. This was originally supposed to be a 2-part episode. That's how it was written. Just like a Ninja Encounter, it was forced into being a 3-parter by the producers.
Why?
So, because apparently part one, and I'll actually be getting to this in a moment because that's the next question. So this is a good lead up to it. Part one has one monster. Part two has a completely different monster. The monster that they fight in part two and part three was only supposed to take place in part two. That's how it was written.
Okay.
But the producers wanted to stretch it out a little bit into 3 episodes.
Why though?
No idea. All I know is that it was a force. It was a force.
I seem to remember us actually enjoying Ninja Encounter.
I think the thing about Ninja Encounter was that we did enjoy it, but we felt that it was probably better as a 2-parter instead of a 3-parter.
Yeah. I think we enjoyed it, but at the same time, we recognized, hey, there's a lot of...
the pacing was off.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pace, that's what it was. The pacing was off because they had to stretch it out. So, but this is actually a good lead in because I was just mentioning, you know, you have a monster from part one, monster from part two. The part one monster, so while Tommy is trying to spend time with Heather, King Mondo is hell-bent on taking over Earth. So he sends Robo-Cupid down to Angel Grove to make everyone fall in love with machines and electronics, thus causing Tommy to be called away from Heather. I'm going to put this note in first, and then I'm going to ask the question. Note on Robo-Cupid. In the Sentai series, Robo-Cupid spent a lot of time around Japanese people and had an overly homosexual overtones to their footage in relation to falling for Clank, to the point that they had to flip Robo-Cupid's gender to female in Zio, since homosexuality was a massive no-no in the 90s.
Not to mention all the homophobia that was going on behind the scenes.
That too. No kidding. Now, with that in mind, what are your thoughts on Robo-Cupid and the concept behind the monster, despite how it was depicted in the Sentai series? And Brian, you will probably be the best one to answer it on the Sentai side, so I'll start with you.
I mean, in Japan, it's been traditional that, you know, you have these overly flamboyant homosexual characters that are played up for laughs. And, you know, say what you will about the current political BS about, you know, homosexual rights in Japan or in the States or whatever. I'm not even trying to get into that. It was a character in the Sentai, in O-Ranger, that was played up for laughs. And I can only imagine being one of the people watching this stuff, trying to get footage and going, what are we going to do with this? Because, you know, I can only imagine watching this footage and going, okay, yeah, a million moms are going to, they're going to just lose it if we keep this plot the way it is. So I think, yeah, it was a necessity that they flipped the gender so that they, because
a monster and a robot, or a robotic monster and a robot flirting
is stupid, but I know for a fact they were absolutely trying to avoid any more like angry letters from mom and dads by doing that. So as much as it sucks, that was something that was probably at the time for the best. We've gotten a little better with LGBT representation of Power Rangers, see Dino Fury. But
one whole LGBT Ranger in 30 years.
I know.
Give him a medal.
But
I don't know anything about the Sentai. I've been very vocal. I don't watch the Sentai. I don't want to watch the Sentai. So, and I apologize if my voice is a little gravelly. I lost my voice at a conference. So here's what I'm going to say. I feel like this continues sort of the home, like what I said earlier, like there's a lot of homophobia going on behind the scenes. And I get what you're saying, Brian. In general, I didn't care about the monster all that much.
Yeah.
For me, it was just like, okay, this is the monster of the week. And if you hadn't told me that the monster was gender swapped, I wouldn't have known. I thought it was hilarious that the monster shtick was making people fall in love with machines. Because at first I was like, wait, is this just going to be like another Cupid monster? And like, is this just going to make a bunch of random people fall in? Because we had a Cupid episode way back when.
Yeah, we did.
So yes. I'm glad that they actually decided to like, remember that this is the cold air quotes and unfeeling air quotes machine empire. So making people fall in love with the machines, and these machines ended up being what, a blender, an arcade game, and a motorcycle,
and like I don't think like was, toasters and
I don't think it was quite as threatening as Alpha and Zorda made it, or as the Rangers made it seem. I think Adam has a line of like, you know, the next step is they're gonna fall in love with the machine empire, and I'm like, it's a stretch between a blender and a machine empire, but I guess you can make that leap. I actually thought it was kind of funny. Tommy being called away. Sorry, final point. Tommy being called away to help the Rangers with it because, you know, they didn't have Zords or something that could be used to fight this monster by themselves. They needed Tommy to rush off was dumb.
Yeah, that was stupid. And one other thing, too, during that scene, Rocky's the one that says, man, this is really weird. And my note for this was, oh, shut up, mister. I want to play pachinko all the time. Like,
all right, so my answer to this is it's a very clever idea that's poorly executed.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm not talking about the gender swap. I couldn't give less of a hoot about that. Like Sasha said, I've not watched the Sentai, if you and Brian hadn't brought it up in idle conversation before I watched the episode, I wouldn't have known they gender swapped the character, right?
Now you know.
But I think if you wanted to do a three-part episode, you should have done it all with the one monster.
Yep. Yes.
And what you should have done is instead of him making people fall in love with like a blender or an arcade machine, or they should have fallen in love with all machines.
Or King the cogs.
King Mondo should have run for president.
hey, hold on. Did we get that in Ninja Store?
Right, but do you see what I'm saying? Like, there is, you could have done all three of these episodes with the single RoboCupid monster. You could have played out the fact that Tommy didn't want to go be a Power Ranger because it reminded him of Kim for a while, right? Just, like, you could have played with the things that are in play, made it into a suitable three-parter, and just, like I said, you could have done so much fun things with the fact that the machine, like, people were falling in love with the machine. Like, have them fall in love with all machines. Have, like, Clank and Orbis take over the police. Have Prince Sprocket take over the schools. Have Queen Machina become, like, a movie star. Like,
and yeah, have maybe one or two of the Rangers also get, like, infected with the kiss, because then, or whatever, yeah, it was, right? Because then that gives a reason for why Tommy needs to be called in, because they're down, you know, two Rangers.
Yeah. Have Tanya fall in love with her Zord or something. I don't know. Like, do you know, or what would be even funnier is have, like, Tanya fall in love with Alpha.
Tanya or Cat.
Well, Kat's on the mountain.
Sure.
Kat, Billy, and Tommy are still on the mountain.
I mean, they still go back and forth to the... Anyways.
Right, but what, yeah, I'm saying is, in my version, Adam, Tanya, and Rocky are trying not to disturb Tommy and right. Kat and Billy, so that Tommy's right. having a break from being a Ranger, right? So Kat, Billy, Tommy, and Heather are all playing out as an actual A plot, right? And then the B plot is everything that's going on in Angel Grove with RoboCupid.
Yeah.
And then eventually, it, like, halfway through episode two, RoboCupid becomes the A plot and the romance becomes the B plot.
Storytelling.
Sorry, did I...
We should write Power Rangers.
Am I overthinking this again?
Just no. A little bit, but you have a good foundation laid out that I think structurally works better than what we have, right? Because we have this disjointed plot of whatever's happening in Angel Grove and then whatever's happening in the Angel Grove Mountains. And then suddenly they defeat this monster. And then we have another monster that leads us into an environmental, like heat wave plot in winter. Meanwhile, everybody else is on a ski resort that is not being affected at all. Right, which makes no sense. Like, it would have been more interesting if they were commenting on, like, hey, it's getting hot, and they took off their jackets and, like, the snow is melting around them. Like, that would have been visual instead of everybody just, like, if instead of, like, just, like, Ernie in front of a fan
that he's not in love with.
Because the spell is broken.
His love is the blender. We talked about this,
which means a fan is just an upright blender, you know that, right? Anyway, Mike, I think that was an excellent segue.
Yes. So, as mentioned at the end of part one, the Rangers do defeat RoboCupid, which then leads into part two, where the Rangers then take on the Defoliator, who Queen Machina sends to attack an already weakened Power Rangers. Now, it should be noted in the Sentai, this is kind of funny because you mentioned the heat wave. The Defoliator in the Sentai actually made core male Rangers rust to death.
What?
To death?
Yes.
I did not get this far in Ranger. What?
So, yeah.
Like permanent death or like most?
I mean, not permanent death, but like death within, you know, the whatever the spell was and whatever, because they obviously came back. But
so they're not totally dead, just a little.
But yeah, so like they, like, yeah, it's one of the interesting notes that I read about it, about this character. And apparently both RoboCupid and Defoliator were very minor monsters in the Sentai.
I mean, they're very minor monsters in this plot, too.
No, but anyways, Queen Machina sends them to attack an already weakened Power Rangers. This actually marks the first time in Zeo that the Machine Empire has sent a second monster to attack the Rangers after they had defeated a monster. How smart of a move was this by Queen Machina to keep the pressure on the Rangers, knowing that they're weakened? And why wasn't this tactic applied earlier?
What do you mean by they were weakened? Because it's not like they lost a Zord. Or
they barely gotten beaten up.
They don't do anything. Tommy uses the wheel of stupidity.
there was like Adam, Tanya, and Rocky got a bit beat up by Cogs beforehand, but that was about it.
Yeah.
But still, the point still stands that, like, all right, you faced one monster, you defeated it. Another monster, here you go, right off the bat, no break. You know, we're going to keep the pressure on.
I don't know. They had two robotic monsters that were made in the last 48 hours, and they just had to use them because that was their quota for the episode, and or for their own, like, machine, for their own, like, you know, factory or whatever.
Which kind of goes against the whole thing of the very first episode of We're Keeping Track, where they said that they can pump out a monster how often? It was like
they can once pump out a cog.
Oh, it was a cog.
That's right. My bad.
But the point still stands that, like, theoretically, if they have the capability to create, let's say, like, take a week, make an army of powerful monster robot things, and launch an invasion of Earth. We talked about this in the premiere, and it will be talked about in the finale, how the Machine Empire does not work as a villain.
The fact of the matter is, it's a super smart plan that she has, but that's why they didn't do it earlier, because it's smart, right? If the Machine Empire actually acted like machines, there is no chance that the Rangers could win, because they would be constantly fighting. They would never stop. There would be planes in the sky, walkers on the ground, and there would be five Rangers, six maybe if Jason's there, right? It's a brilliant idea, but the reason why they haven't done it before is if they did, then the season would already be over.
I agree.
Yep.
Alrighty. So this will lead me into my last question. Due to Tommy's constant disappearances to fight the Machine Empire, Heather becomes impatient with him, but he persuades her to come to dinner at the youth center in Angel Grove, and you guessed it, Tommy had to be called away to battle once again to defeat Defoliator. As a result of this, Heather walks out of Tommy's life for good, but we then learn that Kat has feelings for Tommy.
Hold on a second.
We have known Kat has been obsessively... she has been fixated on Tommy since the moment they met.
And she wasn't... Yep. And Tommy wasn't the one that invited Heather to dinner. It was Kat.
But anyways, yeah. Moving on. Like, you guys already technically answered the part of the why even bother with Heather to set up Kat. So I'm just going to let it just open up to talk about Kat and why did and you already said that you guys didn't feel like it was rushed, but you can now talk about the Kat portion here. I don't even have to finish the question because you already jumped on me.
Well, it's important to specify that this isn't coming out of nowhere, right? At least on Kat's side of things.
Yeah.
She's been in the horny jail for Tommy since the moment they met in season two, right?
Like, yeah. It's
taking a picture of Tommy and Kimberly and ripping Kimberly out of the picture and keeping it in her pocket. That's quite clearly a young lady that has some obsession. Also, yeah. To clarify a little bit on your question about Heather, Mike, I know that the writers weren't thinking that way, because writers and thinking in this episode is not in this season. I don't think Heather was there to be a setup for Kat, right? There is a moment in episode two of this where Heather is sat at a table signing pictures, right? And there's like huge lines, and she waves Tommy to the front. And Kat is very happily standing there going, "You look like you've got an admirer, Tommy," right? Like, egging him on to go hang out with Heather instead of playing kind of jealous, which is either a fault of the director, the actor, or the writer, and I'm going to blame all three. but I genuinely don't think they had put thought into the fact they were going to use this to get Kat and Tommy together until they stretched it out to three parts, right? And when they did, they were like, oh, we need like another 5 minutes. Let's do a thing at the end and Kat and Tommy can do a weird thing.
It does feel very sort of tacked on because, you know, even when like they go snow riding or whatever, Kat's with Billy and Heather's with Tommy because at that point, you know, Heather's shown an interest in Tommy or whatever. But, you know, there was also like, I don't know, I felt like there was some weird bonding going on with Kat and Billy here more than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was like, huh, what if like Kat and Billy had gotten together or something? Like, how would that have played out? But whatever, that's a separate conversation entirely. In terms of like the Heather to Kat, it just felt weird that Kat spends so much time egging Tommy on and then she sets up this romantic dinner for him. It was sort of like, I think by this point, because she's been around the real Tommy and she's good, she's formed this friendship and bond with him like she did with everybody else. So she sees him as a friend and she may still have a crush on him, as we see towards the end when she's talking to Tanya. But then, like, how do you go from, like, here, let me set up this lovely romantic dinner between you and this girl that has been flirting with you the last whatever week, and you've, like, barely paid attention, but, oh, she left you because ranger duties, but look, I'm here. It feels very random.
Something tells me that they might have had this ending for the second part originally before it had to get stretched out, so it was more of a here's what our end goal is, but we have to stretch out how we get to it.
So maybe the whole plot was originally without Heather.
Possibly. I don't know.
Maybe it was supposed to be a little bit different and then they needed like to insert more things. I don't know, Brian.
If you ignore the fact that, because I kind of had some thoughts and then Ben was like, oh, well, this probably is because of really bad writing or people just not, you know, knowing about Kat's past and like how obsessed she was. And like, I get that, but I don't know. I watched this and one of my takeaways from these three episodes was, okay, Kat, say what you will about how she was in the past when she was possessed and how like obsessed she was with Tommy, because yes, that was really weird how obsessed she was with Tommy. In these episodes, she is a solid wingman. It comes off when I was watching this, that she genuinely cared about how Tommy was feeling, and when he got dumped twice, basically, well, I wouldn't say dumped with Heather, but like when he got kind of rejected by Heather, she was there to kind of be like, hey man, you okay? And then like they talked and danced, and you can see that as either Kat being a really good friend or her just going, okay, you know what, this might actually be my chance.
There's also something visually that happens, because like after the Dear John letter, Tommy goes to sulk on the beach or whatever in front of the Angel Grove Lake, and we see the clip portion of the show. And to borrow what you mentioned in our group chat, Brian, of like, this feels a clip show. And then right after the flashback ends, we see Kat approaching Tommy, asking like how he's doing and whatnot. And so it's sort of maybe make like, this is why I think helps reinforce the idea that maybe Heather was like, maybe just there to show Tommy that like he couldn't be in a relationship. And then when this turned into a three-parter, you have the sidelined aspect of this dinner and like whatever. And then they're like, okay, we just need to write something quick, but like Kat will get them together, but like she has a crush on Tommy, so we kind of have to combine the two to make something that is going to get us through our time slot.
Did anybody else, by the way, in episode 3 when Adam and Rocky show up and they're like, hey man, hey, And like Tommy's like, oh man, you're not gonna believe. Did anybody else like cringe at that point?
I mean, I was kind of cringing the entire dinner, but
I cringed so bad. I was like, oh my god, dude, really? Like, ugh. And I almost wanted to just be like, can you let him have dinner and like handle this yourselves? Like, whatever. Anyways.
Like, I just still don't understand why the Power Rangers needed Tommy. That there's four of them and one of him.
Yeah. You can handle, the four of you can handle a villain named the Defoliator.
All right. To talk a bit about what Brian brought up for a minute, about how Kat was being a super solid wingman. Yes, she was. Props to her. However, she made the flip from I'm going to be Tommy's super solid wingman to I'm going to jump on his bones in a heartbeat.
It was like a snap.
Yeah, it was like someone turned on a light switch. She was like, ah, the libido button. Click.
Not how I would phrase it, but sure.
I just think that if they had stuck with her being a super solid wingman, and then a couple of episodes down the line, maybe start introducing Tommy being a bit more open to Kat's advances.
Yeah.
Fine. If they had written her this entire episode as being, hey, it sucks that you broke up with Kim, but now's my chance. Fine. Pick one.
Yep.
Don't do both. That is, and say it with me, kids, bad writing.
So I got one last note that I want to throw out there. So Heather was played by Sarah Brown,
yep,
who would also play Caitlin Starr in VR Troopers and was actually in the original pilot of Cybertron, which Jason David Frank was actually in that, in the original pilot. Which
now, had she been cast in VR Troopers before this, or was it after this?
I don't know the actual time frame. I just wrote the quick little VR Troopers note, because I know Jason David Frank was in the pilot for VR Troopers before he came to Power Rangers.
That had to have been something beforehand, because I think VR Troopers came out in, what, 94, 95? And this is 96?
Yeah.
And that's just me guessing. But
well, and this is also kind of a common theme, because some of these characters, like Raymond, the actor who played Raymond, played a character in another Saban show around the same time. So like Saban's kind of bringing in people from the other shows that didn't kind of pan out a little bit.
Was he in Beetleborgs?
I believe so. He played like a drummer in some band.
Right, Beetleborgs didn't happen until like right now, because we know that how popular Beetleborgs was affects the fact that Justin's in Turbo.
Yeah.
So
it's like you do have some of these actors that come in to play these bit parts, like a Heather or a Raymond, you know, that are from other Saban shows.
How dare you call Raymond a bit part? I'm kidding.
I mean, let's be honest. We all agree Raymond is probably one of the best things that happened to this season, but unfortunately he only got 3 episodes.
Yeah, like, I think it is worth noting that Sarah was in VR Troopers. Part of me wonders if her appearance was contractual. But she's clearly the best actor in this episode.
I could have sworn for a second she was on something like Motorsport, like just like her look and the way she acted. I was like, she looked like she was in one of the shows my mom was watching all the time. But anyways.
And it just, I don't know, it was, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't think that's got much to do with, like, it's just not good, right? At the end of the day, this should have been a really interesting, longer arc about the breakup of Kim and Tommy, and the eventual getting together of him and Kat. Now, I've made it quite clear my feelings on Tommy and Kat as a pair over the course of recording, and it's going to happen even more, especially when we get to Dino Thunder. But I honestly think, had they not rushed into this, I think I would have been less opposed to it in general, right? Because when Kim and Tommy got together, I don't feel anyone was kind of against it. Yeah, I was kind of against it because Tommy was involved and he can get in the sea, take a trip to East Street. But the progression of their relationship felt more like two people getting together over a period of time and dating, right? Kat and Tommy, it's just like, it's done instantly. It's barely a day or two between Kim and Tommy breaking up and Kat being like, I'm gonna jump your bones.
I got a question. By this point, because obviously, what episode was this? This was kind of early on, but did Saban and company know that Turbo was going to be everybody's last season?
Turbo wasn't. No, probably no. It was no, because I think that happened in between Turbo and Z. In between Zio and Turbo. That's why, because what happened was everybody wasn't done. Jason David Frank was done. So his role was drastically reduced in Turbo. And then on top of that, because Tommy was leaving and apparently this was the Tommy show, they decided to, scrap everybody else.
Yeah, because Johnny Young Bosch has openly said, and I remember him saying this at a panel at a convention that I was at, I think it was Anime USA 2014. He actually said that they were getting ready to go into Turbo, and then they actually saw the casting call for four new Rangers.
They weren't even told they saw the casting list?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Johnny.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I remember Johnny Young Bosch actually saying that, like, yeah, we found out by seeing the casting call for the show.
Oh,
that's how we found out we were getting replaced in Turbo.
Okay. Because my train of thought was because they had three seasons to build up the relationship between Tommy and Kim, but if they had known prior that Tommy was leaving, then maybe they wanted to finish up that story as well. They wanted to we don't have enough time to build up this relationship when we're already 1/4 of the way through the season.
No, I think it's just a matter of Tommy, this being the Tommy show, and him being gone, and they didn't know what to do with it. So they're like, oh, look, Kat's here. She had a crush on him. Let's just do that.
So I had to step away for a moment. I apologize.
How dare you?
I got back to Sasha going, oh, my God.
I think the exact words were, oh, my Kirby, but basically, because we were talking. But
I'm going to guess that Mike told you why everyone left in Turbo.
Oh, no, I knew why everybody left in Turbo. What I didn't know was that they weren't told they were leaving, or they were essentially changing the cast.
Yeah, basically, JDF went, I'm leaving. And Saban went, well, I'm kicking everyone else out then.
Right, so that part I knew, but what I didn't know was that Johnny and the others had found out, not from Saban or a producer, but from seeing the casting call go out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
that is, you know what, that is so on par for Power Ranger producers, but it's just still incredibly, I hate him.
Yeah. I just remember that panel and I think somebody directly asked Johnny Young Bosch, did you guys know you were going to be leaving Turbo? And that's when he shared the story. We knew we were leaving because we saw the casting call that they were replacing us. It was just so mind-blowing when he said that. So
it's awful. But I also have a note here about the general plot. After this episode ended, I wrote, this was a lot of work just to set up Kat and Tommy getting together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly think, right, that if they'd spent another...
Had they not filmed so much B-roll
No.
So much skiing.
It's not even that, right? You could have kept this episode exactly the same.
Yeah.
Right? But in the end, not done the Cat and Tommy thing. And then over the next 8 to 10 episodes, done little bits of Tommy and Cat flirting with each other and just sort of taking your time a bit more, getting Tommy and Cat together, and achieved the exact same result, but had way less of a fan backlash to Cat and Tommy.
See, but the thing is, though, is that the backlash wasn't to Cat and Tommy. The backlash was to the letter.
Oh, there was a lot of backlash to Cat and Tommy.
I'm not saying there wasn't a backlash to the letter. I'm saying you had backlash to the letter, and then you had backlash to Tommy and Cat getting together so soon after the letter.
Oh yeah, that part I would agree. Yeah, backlash, it definitely happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely happened.
There was backlash to both.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, you know,
I have heard the word backlash so much in the last 30 seconds.
Makes me want to go back to 1994 and watch a pay-per-view.
Yep.
but anyways, any other thoughts, notes?
A couple of things. This whole episode's about love. Right. I would have really enjoyed to see a bit more of an exploration between the relationship between Mondo and Mashina.
Sure.
As kind of like an echo to what's going on Earth. I'm fascinated by the fact that Mondo and Mashina seem to have this. They're in love, but they're AI and machines, and Mondo hates love. He literally says, "Never say that word in my presence," in a couple of episodes. Like, I just think it would be really funny, fun to explore that dynamic. Also,
yeah.
Tommy can go to hell. Ha ha ha, he got dumped.
I mean, you got to say it at least once.
So with that, I think we can move on. Sasha is happy. So with that, we're just going to start with Sasha since she's celebrating. Sasha, where can the people find you on social media?
You can find me over on geekgirl101.tumblr.com. Definitely let us know what you think of the show. We're always interested in what fans think. You know, if you're coming to mention us something we said on a specific episode, do let us know what that episode is.
Yeah.
Just because we're cute. Like, we recorded so many of these episodes, we can't remember which episode. So if you're like, hey, in episode 2 of season 3 or 4, whatever, just let us know.
Give us context.
Seriously. Also, you can find me over on Twitter at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan.
Ben, where can the people find you?
He didn't say fight me this time.
I was distracted by Ben's mockery of my little social media shenanigans.
Anyways, Ben, where can the people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
You can find me doing the video game thing over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
You can also find the sister show, Two Voices from Grid, Horsemania. Mania. It's not about awesome. It's not about horses, which is me saying awesome. Aww. Weird. Awesome Mania, the professional wrestling watch along podcast where we watch pay-per-views and riff along with them, usually with a guest, over at
txhthockey.com/x95productions,
or use the little drop down
and, oh yeah, just drop down, it works. The
many layers of drop down. Yeah, that'll do me.
All right, Brian,
you can find me in bed trying not to die from this cold. You can also find me on Twitter at OneDrunkGeek. You can find me at CastWaveStudios.com. And you can find me at Twitter, back when I was the Blue Ranger, under my screen name, Blue Ranger B_RYE, where I talk about Power Rangers and Super Sentai. And
small point, he said you could find him on Twitter at Blue Ranger B-R-I. I believe that was TikTok, wasn't it?
That is TikTok. Thank you. Sorry. Cold medicine just swirling through my head. That's about that for that.
All right, and then you can find me on Twitter at the Lindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75, and of course everything is on the website at txhthockey.com. Just hit the drop down menu, or if you're actually on a computer, to click on x75 productions and everything will be there.
Please follow us on Twitter,
and you can find this show on Twitter at vftg_pr, and you can find us on Google Podcasts and the Spotify.
So with that, Ben, it's that time. Take us out.
Wow. What a long, strange road it has been. From a Dear John letter meant for a man who someone had already read and not told him was coming, to Adam acting as court proclaimer, to a whole lot of snowboarding footage we didn't need, apart from the cogs, to kind of a weird relationship with an age difference, to Cat just being predatory and just jumping to bones of the leftover meat. Wow. We will leave you, as we always do, by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on non-gender specific honorifics.
And until our next more phenomenal episode, be sure to grab your zeonizers and your zeon crystals.
And may the power protect you.
So much snow footage.